Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Product Marketing Life podcast, brought to you by the Product Marketing Alliance. I'm your host, Mark Cazzini, Product Marketing Manager at Jobber. Every 2 weeks, I connect with PMMs all over the world about a product marketing topic of their choice.
We're kicking off 2023 a bit differently than in years past. This time around, we're going to be passing the hosting reins over to our friends at Ghost Ranch Communications. You probably haven't heard of Ghost Ranch, and that's because they live behind the scenes, helping B2B product marketers bring their stories to life with consultative presentation and sales-enabling asset design services. Even though as a product marketer, you're often asked to develop some of your organization's most valuable content and assets that help drive revenue and adoption, it's rare that you have access to your own dedicated design team. As a result, you usually find yourself waiting in the same queue as the rest of the org. Ghost Ranch is that fractional design arm dedicated to helping product marketing teams bring their ideas to life with a level of responsiveness and collaboration that is hard to find in in-house or from full-service agencies. In this week's show, Mikey Miodusky, the founder and CEO of Ghost Ranch, sits down for a conversation with Esther Yoon, the Vice President of Industry and Product Marketing at RingCentral. Together, they discuss visual storytelling, product keynotes, and the importance of a holistic approach to messaging. Esther also shares a refreshing outlook on what she anticipates for product marketers in 2023. Beyond that, Esther breaks down what separates good product marketers from freaking phenomenal product marketers, why she tries to look at messaging from a holistic multimedia view, her advice for convincing the C-suite on the value of greater narrative development, and finally, her view of how sales will actually use your slides and why she intentionally designs for composability to ensure the message will adhere. All right, with that out of the way, take it away, Mikey.
All right. Hey there. This is Mikey Miodusky. I'm the founder and CEO of a presentation agency called Ghost Ranch Communications. And we're a remote company that loves working with product marketers to help them better enable their field or show up strong for a big product keynote, things like that. And I am honored and delighted today to be speaking with the Vice President of Industry and Product Marketing at RingCentral, Esther Yoon. Esther, thank you so much for joining me for a conversation about all things presentation nerdery, storytelling, product marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. I love nerding out on product marketing. It's something that, you know, I'm kind of a weirdo in the sense that it's a role that is incredibly strategic. It's tough. I call ourselves kind of the trash can of marketing, but I love every aspect of it for some reason. And I'm still in it. So
you are. Yeah. You are. And I was gonna start there too, is like, how the heck did you get into it? Because I haven't met one product marketer who has the same, you know, path of entry. And I was going to ask you what you wanted to be when you grew up and maybe how you stumbled into what you're doing now.
You know, I wanted to be, I actually don't know what it's called, but I've, as a kid, I've always wanted to be the person who makes soundtracks for movies. I've always had kind of a creative side, but one of the things I realized is I'm actually not very good at being creative to the extent that, you know, one calls themselves like an artist or anything like that. I'm not a designer by any means. I don't have that knack. I'm just good enough where I can recognize and appreciate, you know, really good music, art, all of that. So I started off exploring in different areas where I can express my creativity. Like I loved being on the industrial design team as a UX intern. And, you know, from there I switched over into marketing because I just couldn't hang with the UX folks. They are just so incredibly brilliant. And quite honestly, I'm like, I don't think I'm ever going to be that successful here. So I went into marketing, which was kind of a more balanced skill set of creative, but being very business oriented. I was always a pretty, you know, good writer. So I went into comms. Then from there, I was actually reached out to the product marketing leader at a company that I was at. And they said, hey, you have a really great knack for turning, you know, product value into like a story, that people want to read. And, you know, she was like, hey, I want to give you a shot on my team. And she's like, are you interested? So I jumped over. And then from there, I was like, wow, this is exactly what I wanted to do. It's the perfect amount of creative, perfect amount of strategy, perfect amount of just marketing generalist, because I've always wanted to dabble in everything. And so, yeah, never looked back.
That's great. And I imagine it's evolved over the last few years. How have you seen product marketing evolve in your space?
Product marketing has never truly had a solid identity from what I've seen. It varies at every single company. Are you a full stack product marketer? Do you just, you know, I guess product marketing is everything and anything because it's, you tend to be a SME and a marketing generalist. So it's highly dependent on the products within a company. And that's why it has a tendency to be so varied. I've always sought after roles that I consider as like full stack product marketing, looking at the entire life cycle of a product from, you know, partnering closely with engineers and PMs, product managers, all the way to ensuring its success and adoption and you know, longevity to, you know, extend customer lifetime value.
That's great. And you mentioned, you know, someone recognized that knack that you have for taking something super technical and maybe doing some of that like English to English translation, you know, to turn it into a story that sticks with the audience at play. And we know a lot of times that comes in the medium of something like a presentation. And you've stood out to us as one of those clients who tends to take those big presentation opportunities very seriously. I think we ran into you as y'all were preparing for a big industry keynote. And, you know, since then we've seen you really throw your work and effort into these analyst summits or analyst roadshows, you know, things like CAB events or just user conferences in general. Why do you think you take that so seriously? What's at stake, you know, to get that right?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad. So this is one of the biggest downfalls of product marketers. And this to me is what separates good product marketers from freaking phenomenal product marketers. All product marketers are relatively familiar with the messaging framework. It's this doc, however long it may be, one page, 15 pages, that takes and manifests in kind of just a Word doc or Google doc format of, you know, your core pillars, your benefit statements, your value props, the supporting features, et cetera. But one of the things that's super important that I don't see a lot of product marketers really lean into is the manifestation of that messaging. Meaning it's one thing to have it on a doc that can scale to different teams so that you can, you know, scale out consistent messaging across the org. But messaging is just a single component. To me, there's visual messaging. There's how does that messaging manifest as a way, you know, let's say, for example, on a presentation. It's one thing to have words on a slide, right? But when you pair that with the visual component that tells a story without you having to read anything, it really adds gravitas and impact. And so I try to look at messaging more holistically across all different mediums of manifestation, meaning it's not just copy. You know, if you're making a video, there's the audio component, right? There's there's the motion graphics, there's the talent, there's all of it, right? In the context of a presentation, you know, words on a slide, one thing, but when you can do it in a way that kind of brings in the visual best practices. I mean, we're visual creatures, right? Mm-hmm. What do people say? Like, you know, nowadays everyone has the attention span of a goldfish and messaging docs tend to be long and hairy and we live and breathe in it. But honestly, we have to land it pretty quickly with our customers and our stakeholders. And so the visual component is one of the most like underutilized ways that I think product marketers look at messaging, meaning we go, okay, like it's good enough. It's internal documentation. And that actually, you're really doing your messaging a disservice there.
Mm-hmm. So Esther, I know you did have that generalist background. Not everyone listening product marketer wise, you know, might be great at messaging, but might feel a little imposter syndrome or be worried that, hey, I'm not a designer. I don't know what to really do about that. But what are some ways that you think more PMMs could like really lean into or explore, like, how do I think more visually? You know, they don't necessarily have to execute it, right? But how have you developed that skill set over the years?
Yeah. So, you know, really great messaging ends with, you know, that complete manifestation, but it starts with really great competitive positioning. It starts with a clear understanding of how your solution has a product market fit, who your target audience is. And then somewhere in between, one of the things that I like to do is think of the analogies that we can relate with or that are culturally relevant or trending, you know, especially if the messaging is being told in a specific time and place or to a specific audience. And so, you know, we had this idea of like, how do we want to make CIOs feel? Well, we have that all, you know, written out in our messaging doc. But I'm like, well, there's an analogy here. Like, you want to feel like a hero. You want to feel like, you know, you saved your company from whatever your quote unquote, you know, metaphorical villains are. And we're like, dude, let's just run with it. Let's create a visual theme called CIOs are the new superheroes. And man, let me tell you that really resonates, right? You bring in your messaging, you combine it with something that's relatable on a personal level, culturally relevant, easy to understand, right? Superheroes versus villains, right? Good versus bad. And then you kind of marry it with your messaging and then the visuals, right? We went straight up into, no, let's draw a cape, draw like, you know, put our logo as like the Superman sign on the chest. And then, you know, the things that we're trying to combat in the Enterprise, like those are villains. Like, give me a Joker manifestation. Like, let's fully run with this. And it really landed well at our keynote.
That's amazing. And what are some signs? Like, how do you know it is working, you know, during and after a keynote like that, that it was worth the effort and the outside the box thinking?
Yeah. I mean, the first sign I knew was working was when like one of our competitors kind of came up to us and they were like, hey, you know, on the low key, that was a pretty awesome presentation. Like, we're taking notes and they're flattering us. And it was really great to kind of get that validation, especially from a competitor. But you know, when you know it's really working is when you see your messaging being sticky and people want to share it, right? And you see that it's resonating with customers and they're saying, wow, like your story is so different from what I've heard. And, you know, that's what I want to bring to my organization. Like, that is what I'm paying for. Cause quite honestly, you're providing a product, a solution, a service, whatever. And it's trying to stick out from the noise. Like, I'm in a very saturated industry. There are a lot of competitors, you know, don't get me started with how many video conferencing, cloud telephony, messaging providers that are out there. So you have to, you know it's successful when your story sticks out from the noise in a way that resonates with your customers. And from an internal standpoint, like your team members, your employees, your sales reps, they want to share it. Mm-hmm. Like, I got so many messages that are like, can you give us that deck? And I'm like, give me 1 second. We're like salesifying it. So, you know, those are all kind of qualitative metrics for like, wow, this is really working.
That's great. And I want to get back to that sort of the life cycle of a deck too. You know, I love that term, salesifying it. But first too, because I think again, people listening are like, yes, I understand the value. What if they're having a hard time selling, you know, yeah, we want to go crazy on a big keynote like this because the product marketer knows the value and knows that it's worth that investment. How do they sell it up chain if they're having a hard time, you know, conveying the value of better, more cogent, you know, and beautiful and standout-ish narrative? Any tips you've had there?
Yeah. So there's kind of different ways to look at it. So if you're trying to sell like the importance of a keynote, meaning should you invest in a keynote, like that's a totally different stakeholder process, in my opinion. If you're trying to look to convince why you need to invest in visually manifesting the messaging in a more impactful manner, and telling your key stakeholders on why certain narratives are important and how to manifest in a way that's going to drive impact, like that's a different approach. And the way I start with why do we need a narrative? Do we need a narrative? When I get asked those questions, and honestly, typically at RingCentral, I don't get asked those questions because I found that our leadership truly understands the impact and the value of really great messaging. But what I've done in the past is, you know, I've sat in a room with executives and I said, hey, so like, how would you tell our differentiated story? Someone comes up to you at a trade show and they go, what makes RingCentral special? Or what makes, you know, XYZ, you know, your company name here special? Why should I give you my money? I guarantee you, if you had the guts to share that out and ask that question in your executive meeting, you will likely get a ton of varied responses that are all really inconsistent, not really cogent, not differentiated from, you know, other, maybe what your competitors offer. And you'll start to see the light bulbs go off. Like, wow, if our executives, if, you know, can't even tell this narrative in a clean, consistent manner, imagine what our sales reps are telling our prospects and customers, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an exercise that I've brought in is, I don't have to do the convincing. I just have to ask the right questions to get the light bulbs going off. And typically that goes into, well, if you can't sell your own product and if you can't find the white space in your industry amongst your competition, then your sales reps probably can't, and we should probably help them. And that's where the messaging happens. But then also, you know, it's not just about conversations. It's about the presentations. It's about, you know, all the different touch points across marketing, video assets, ads, and how your messaging manifests in those kind of mediums. So either working really closely with your creative teams, but typically they tend to be very busy and focused directly on pipeline attributing assets. You know, that's why we work so closely with Ghost Ranch, who's, you know, worked very closely with our brand team to make sure that there's brand consistency and everything's like creative kosher. It really helps scale, you know, operations across marketing and product
Yeah, that's huge. I guess the, if you're not aligned up top, and it's always eye-opening to know that that is very common, right? And yeah, how does that just cascade down and out? And I think you hit the nail on the head that it really doesn't. And people have to sort of, you know, get clever and get creative and interpret and try to articulate things how best they can. So yeah, that alignment up top and consistency throughout sounds like you're better set up to scale, which is awesome. So then that thought of, okay, the life of a deck like that, you have a great event, everyone in sales and your CS managers and the like are like, okay, we need those slides like ASAP. What is that process to salesify or to create the different variables and parts and pieces that you think the rest of the org will need? And how do you prioritize those as far as like the release might go?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of go through what are you trying to accomplish and who's your audience? Yeah, at a keynote, it's very different, right? You're kind of driving thought leadership, you know, depending on the duration of your keynote, you're keeping things a little bit higher level. And it's really driving the hook of what your company's trying to do without being too salesy. Like, you know, at a keynote, the worst thing you can do is just go up there and use that platform to pitch and pitch and pitch. People want to learn. People want to, garner insights. And so it's slightly different. You know, it's designed for a slightly different purpose. On the sales side, you have a goal to educate prospects on your value that you can provide directly. So it definitely is that pitch environment, right? So the messaging stays consistent, but we add and modify different components so that we can go deeper, like into product details and what I call make it real moments. Here's how the product does this to help you accomplish X, Y, Z. And a lot of that's dependent on, you know, sales discovery calls and all that. But in the end, what happens is we leverage these components that we used in the keynote to drive consistency across all the different customer touch points. Mm-hmm. And this is where I get down to, you know, Ghost Radish has really helped us scale our messaging across all the different customer touch points from keynote all the way to, you know, fourth customer or fourth prospect call, and has allowed us to preserve messaging integrity and keep brand consistency, even across things like presentations and sales pitch decks, which, you know, occasionally turn into this Frankenstein type of a deck, right? Because mm-hmm. everyone's like, oh, it's not pretty enough. Let me modify it. By trickling down kind of the content that we've created for, you know, these flagship events, it has really raised the caliber of our content across the board.
Love to hear that. And I think too, you know, I think product marketers, being such a wide and varied title and job description at every different org, often hear that, hey, can you make this pretty kind of thing? And so many ad hoc requests from sales. Have you noticed a positive impact then when you have tightened things up? Are you seeing or experiencing any less of that? Or is it easier to deal with?
Absolutely easy to deal with. Kind of going back to, you know, once you have a core set of narratives that you're trying to drive and that you create a core set of visually kosher slides or presentation materials that you can reuse and repurpose, it makes the product marketing job a lot easier. Meaning, well, in the end, it's messaging. Now, it's going to manifest in slightly different ways, but at least you have a core set of assets that you can go back to and, you know, kind of distill into different formats. We've even exported some of the presentation slides as images for blogs because we're like, this totally flies. It looks great. So absolutely, we do get a lot of less make it pretty slides. We do get a lot more consistency, and we do get a lot less sleepless nights of like, oh my gosh, I hope this sales rep doesn't just, you know, take our slide and then rejigger it to whatever, because it's already gorgeous and they're already pretty pumped on it. So yeah.
That's awesome. And do you have, I know there's so many different frameworks and best practices out there. Do you have the own Esther Yoon, like best practices or like architecture of a sales deck that, you know, it's got to check these boxes? Do you have like some ideas around something that, you know, makes for a pretty decent flow or, you know, sort of outline for a sales deck? Or does it just totally depend on the scenario?
Well, it depends on the scenario and the products that you're offering and how complex. Is it a hardware product that you're selling services? Are you multi-product SaaS vendor? So it really does vary. What we typically have done to get the best results of usage, but also impact of sales pitch decks is work very, very closely with our sales leaders and our sales enablement managers to say, hey, what are the types of calls that you're driving? What's your sales strategy, right? There are different types of sales best practices that, you know, your chief revenue officer might be driving. And I'm not going to talk about RingCentral specifically, but, you know, you have, for example, you could have a framework where the first call is about discovery. The second call is typically an hour long and the goals are X, Y, Z. And mapping your pitch deck to those goals will get maximum usage out of them. And also you'll just be more aligned with your sales teams. Mm-hmm. And so we start with that framework. The second thing that I found is you will always assume always that your reps, especially if you're talking about multi-product portfolios, will build their own slides in a way that's best suited to their needs. So kind of design with that in mind, meaning design for composability. Make sure that you're being very intentional about that versus like, no, you have to have these slides in this specific order and in this format because it will get broken. That's just kind of the nature of the beast here. Unless you have a very like, you know, single product experience where it's like, hey, typically we have one sales call, like we're going to put, like, we just want something that we can PDF out to them. Sure. But I found in most B2B SaaS, you know, portfolios, that's really not the case. So I design with composability in mind, meaning assume sales is going to want to just kind of say, well, I only want to talk about this, or I want to double click into this more. And so we always have a pretty robust set of appendix slides. We have, you know, product components that, you know, they can mix and match based on their discoverability. Something that I have kept consistent though is the narrative that you kick off with, like set the stage in a way that's differentiated, carves out your white space in the industry. And then, yeah, go from there, work with your sales enablement and sales managers to, you know, define the rest of how you want to format your pitch deck.
That's pretty enlightened. I love that acknowledgement of how things really work. And yeah, like it sounds like a great way to meet them in the middle, you know. How about what are you excited about for like 2023 and excited to focus on in your own career?
What am I excited about? 2023 is going to be, I think, a really great year for product marketers because, you know, a lot of organizations are buckling down on budget, resources are getting tight, et cetera. So from a marketer, I'm really excited because product marketers tend to thrive in these kind of resource constraint eras. You know, we're not like growth or demand gen where our marketing activities are typically dependent on like really large budgets. This is, I think, a really great opportunity for product marketing to flex their prowess around being really aware of customer needs and issues and really helping bring that to light across the entire organizations or across the entire organization, partner community, et cetera. So I'm really excited about that because it just creates an environment where I think, you know, if you're a great product marketer, you can really take your marketing to the next level. Generally speaking, as a marketer, I'm really excited to see kind of this new era of marketing where we kind of get back into getting more creative overall. I think The past 2 years, especially with the pandemic and so many SaaS industries, it's been kind of the golden era where you didn't have to necessarily be a great marketer to do well. You can just kind of run basic digital advertising, social, whatever. Like there was a lot of money flowing in. No, I think when budgets get tighter and, you know, people are like you really have to find more creative ways, more like guerrilla marketing approaches to reaching your audience and you know, manifesting that messaging in a more exciting and different way. So I'm kind of excited for the gold, like what I consider a more scrappier golden era of marketing in 2023.
Oh, I love that. That's some silver lining. I love how you view the world, Esther. That's awesome.
Yeah. I know you got to get excited about something. It's just been a really rough, honestly, 2022 so far for a lot of folks.
Yeah.
But, you know, during this times is when you really see people getting creative and that's something I'm looking forward to.
That's great. And how do you stay fresh for your day to day? I know you have a pretty active adventure lifestyle. What do you like to do for fun?
Oh, I'm an avid mountain biker and I surf and I play volleyball and I think you need to do stuff like that in order to stay fresh, right? In product marketing, you are so deep into sometimes the technical details, competitive research, and it's really easy to get burnt out. The most impact I've brought to the organization, or every organization I worked at, typically comes after like a week or 2 week long vacation, mm-hmm. when I have a fresh pair of eyes on things, or when I hit the refresh button on my brain, or I get just inspiration from things outside of the context of my industry, which tends to be very insular. And yeah, just quite honestly, like, it's a lot of recycling of ideas that I see, and you need to rip yourself away from that. So I highly recommend, like, if you're in product marketing or marketing in general, make time to go on that walk or find a new hobby. You need that fresh perspective to keep your messaging and ideas fresh as well. That's what I firmly believe.
That's great. And I mean, it sounds like from your background as a generalist, you tried a lot of things, and I'm sure that's what's informed you to have a more sort of that comprehensive view, you know, that helps you, I don't know, maybe better position things, because you can zoom out and understand how the world and different industries work. So props to you for that. And then my favorite question, Esther, is, okay, you're about to take the next big keynote or a TED Talk or something. What is going to be your walkout song?
Oh, man. Okay, so there's this band called Kurongbin. Super awesome. They've been working with Leon Bridges. But Kurongbin, People Everywhere, that's my jam. It's been on my Spotify Wrapped for like 4 years in a row as the number one song. So I obviously have to walk out to it in my next keynote.
Bam. Okay. Yeah, that's got some stay power. I'm excited to tune into that. Oh, that's awesome. Well, Esther, do you have any other parting shots or anything you'd like to plug before we, you know, depart for the year?
Yeah. So, you know, as a product marketer, we try to fill in all the gaps that we can, right? Whenever there's a gap in marketing or in the go-to-market process, we tend to be the type of folks that like say, hey, don't worry, like we'll cover this. And in order to keep the go-to-market engine moving, you know, messaging and that creative manifestation of that is something that we're obviously responsible for. But creative manifestation, a visual manifestation of your messaging is so important. I highly recommend working very closely with experts to make sure that like you don't have to be the expert in anything and everything. You have to be the expert in messaging and positioning. So partnering really close with vendors or, you know, your creative teams that are the experts or SMEs when it comes to visual representation, visual manifestation, it's going to take your messaging to the next level. Trust me on this. Like, you will do yourself a favor by opening up bandwidth, and then you'll elevate all your content with messaging that people want to share and that will click with folks a lot more instantly versus having to read, you know, a paragraph or a bunch of copy on screen. So, you know, just it's something that I think is really important for product marketing organizations to look at is what's the work stream for how you work with creative partners to manifest your messaging, and how can you turn that into a well-oiled machine to be successful as a product marketer?
Oh, that's great. Love that. Collaboration equals greater adoption, hopefully. And yeah, and a successful launch of whatever you're working on. That's awesome.
Yeah. Know what you're good at and know what others are great at. Combine it and boom, you get something better.
Make some magic. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Esther, thank you so much for joining me. And we love following you and your career. And we're wishing you the best. And yeah, some exciting creativity to dive into in 2023. So we'll be watching.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Mikey. It was an honor to be featured on this show.
All right. Thanks so much.
For everyone still tuned in, thanks so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please help us spread the word to other product marketers. Before we leave you to get on with your day, if you want to get involved, here are a few ways you can. If you're a product marketer and you want to come on the show and speak about your day, a specific topic, or your role in general, that's one option. If you want to flex your podcast hosting skills, being a guest host is another. And finally, if you or your company want to sponsor an episode, there's a third. Thanks again, and have a great morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are.